if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
There were a couple of girls that came along just to try. And that is what we really want to see, is just people to try. You know, you start anything and you're not good at it. Everybody starts at start.
Renee Wynn specializes in getting people comfortable with new ideas. Renee became NASA's Chief Information Officer in July of 2015 after 25 years of working with the Environmental Protection Agency. During NASA's 2016 International Space Apps Challenge, Renee was on hand at Pasadena's Cross Campus facility to confer with collaborating Space Apps Pasadena teams as they worked in this worldwide problem-solving hackathon. Renee, what first inspired you to get into science and do what you're doing today?
Some of it was by accident. So I was with the Environmental Protection Agency for 25 years. And one of my approaches to working on environmental policy was to get into the field and talk to the project managers in the field just to understand what the policy issues were. Where is it a technical issue, and maybe where is it a words related issue, which is what policy is. And when I got out there, I started to look around and I'd say, wow, what if you forget something when you go out to the field? And some of the places where we did cleanup were so far from the airports and the cities that if you forgot something that you might need on a schematic for a groundwater pump and treat system, I would say, what are you going to do? And then the advent of mobile devices and computers kind of came around, laptops and things like that, and then we did to the mobile devices. And so then I got into some of the interface between collecting information from the field and being able to use that information to report to Congress on the progress of the programs and the environmental policies themselves. And so it all sort of was very happenstance. So I ended up as the interface person between the technical folks working and designing stuff to how we needed to measure program success and being able to report our successes to Congress to do that. And I sort of fell into the field and then so on and so forth. And then at EPA was moved to the deputy CIO position. The CIO is a political appointed Senate confirmed position at EPA. They were looking for somebody who'd been with the agency for a long time, so I was asked to be the deputy CIO. I remained a civil servant, and that's when I got into the CIO world. And eventually went on to say, wow, I really like this world. Maybe I can do this somewhere else. And the NASA position came along. And so I jumped into NASA and joined NASA. And 2 months later, I went from the deputy CIO to the CIO. So what really got me into this was recognizing information needs to flow. And as the technology made it easier for information to flow, I really saw how it could make a huge difference in telling the story of public service, as well as telling the story to Congress on, you know, supporting the taxpayers' money that we get.
What is one of your own favorite stories to tell about telling the story of public service as CIO of NASA?
Well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of very cool stories about moving to NASA. And I think I'll tell you, maybe it's a change in attitude in one of my favorite things. So when I got to NASA, I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be cool. I'm going to get to meet an astronaut. Well, in my first day, I met several astronauts. And in my first week, I'd met even more. And I went, oh, I guess NASA has a lot of astronauts. So one of my goals also was to get around to all the centers as quickly as I possibly can, as early in my tenure at NASA as possible. So I said, okay, well, I guess I have to set new opportunities. And I said, okay, test pilots. We do aeronautics, so meet test pilots. And so in one meeting, I'm sitting with three of them. I'm going, oh, okay. And then I got on an airplane to fly back home, and I'm sitting next to a test pilot that knew the test pilots that I'd met. So I'm going, okay, so now that I've entered this aeronautics world, meeting test pilots doesn't seem so difficult. So then I say to myself, all right, I need to go tour the centers in depth. And I just had a trip to Johnson Space Flight Center. And I got to do some very cool things. And I think the coolest thing that I got to do was I got to hold a moon rock. And I got to see a trash can that was labeled lunar trash only. So my EPA roots are very much at play when I'm here at NASA.
How did you first get involved with space apps? What do you remember best from the first one?
Well, when I first joined NASA, I had heard about space apps, and there was a lot of discussion about its benefit. Well, being somebody who loves to serve the public, it was very obvious to me at the surface that this was a great thing to do. And so I very early on reached out to Deborah Diaz, and I said, Deborah, I would like to be part of this. And when I became the CIO, then I felt it was my obligation to say, I want to be a part of this, and I want to be there for it, so that I can demonstrate to her that I support this great work that she's doing, and I could see and feel and experience firsthand the benefit this has in the public, because we are sparking amazing imaginations around here today, and it's so cool to be part of it. I mean, I can't tell you how inspiring it is to be in touch with people that are thinking of things and trying to solve problems that we hadn't even imagined yet.
What goes through your head when you step onto that stage and you had, I think, a red-eye flight to get here pretty much, and now you're going to address people and spark their imaginations? What are you thinking?
The first thing that I do is I have to shake off being tired. And so I will just spend a few moments just kind of taking stock of my body and how I feel. And then I have to say to myself, and I say, listen, I'm a public servant, right? You pay my salary and I get to do cool things when I spend that salary to do that. But then I say, this is my chance to be as a public servant, to tell you, the audience, I am pleased to be here. And so I know that I have to be genuine and I have to be connected. And this is also one of the aspects of my job that I absolutely love doing, and that is being an ambassador for NASA and to be an ambassador for women in science and technology and in the arts field and in the design field, to tell anybody that anything is really possible. Because I have to remind people, I have an economics background.
Let's draw on that background for a minute and tell me about yesterday. What were you seeing with the women experiencing space apps?
What I saw was sparkle in their eyes, and that for whatever, there were many women that were here that overcame obstacles to be here. And I saw them feeling the payback from perseverance. And I think all of us, no matter what field that you go in, there's always this level of perseverance that you must go through. Perhaps you're frustrated by what you don't know, or you're frustrated by the language of the business and you're, how do I learn this language? Or just frustrated by the basics and being a beginner again. And what I saw is people that had persevered through their level of maturity and understanding and beginning to see the payoff. And then I also saw the connection from another woman to another woman, or to a younger generation, and being able to coach them through and be inspired by each other so that they knew that it was all worth it. I mean, there are some women that had some tremendous stories that you just say, wow, it was a lot easier for me to accomplish some of what I've accomplished. Not everything that I've accomplished was easy, but in some instances you said, wow, you really did have to come on quite the road to get here, and I'm really glad that you did.
What was one of those stories that inspired you the most?
Wow. I think that there's a woman here who allows you to touch color and it turns it into music. And she's got her doctorate, and she was interested in physics, but what she really wanted was to bring some of that to life and make it tangible. And she loved music, and so she merged her two loves together. And for her to take touch and turn it into music, that is a hard problem. And she made it look easy. And when you talk to her, she's very quiet, and she sits in a very shy position, you know, very not closed body, but when she sits down, she just is always observing and looking around and that. But when you talk to her about what she did and ask her to describe it, she just pops to life, and she stands practically 8 feet tall. And she's just, to be able to take something and think it possible when no one else has gone that way, or at least no one else that you know of, it was just kind of so cool to sit and have her describe that to me. And I think that she, and as I reflect back on accessibility for blind and the deaf and other handicaps or different capabilities, and that is that, you know what, she's bringing just a different aspect of accessibility from technology, and I just wonder where she's going to be able to take this, and I just know it's going to be great.
We won't embarrass her by saying her name, but I know who you mean, and she had these pictures where you could touch the flowers and you heard different instruments. What an amazing lady.
Yeah, she was amazing, and then she thought of the instruments to go with the part, right? I run out of instruments when I run out of fingers.
You get that far. I get run out of them when I have three fingers here.
Right. And so as we talk, right, we have different talents, Dot, right? But we're just amazed by the talents that come here.
Let's talk about some of what we're seeing today, some of the really cool hacks that are going on right now as we talk at Space Apps 2016.
So I've seen one thing in particular that I never would have imagined, but you've got a lot of folks that have watched space grow over the years, right? I was very young when we walked on the moon, and I'm second generation NASA. A lot of folks don't realize that. My dad was a metallurgist. I didn't know what a doctor of metal was. Boy, have I come to appreciate the importance of understanding metals at NASA. Of my parents, my mom had the cooler job, which is hard to believe. She worked covert operations for the National Security Agency, long before women were even considered to be in those positions. So going back to the inspiration in that, so it is back to walking on the moon. So why does all this make sense? Walking on the moon, this young man, I can say that, I'm a little older than he is, he noticed that and read up on that when we landed on the moon, we created this dust kick up, and that dust was sticking to the spacesuits and it was creating problems for the spacesuits. So he's already thinking, well, when we go to Mars with humans, we're already at Mars, we've all seen Rover, to do that we might have that same issue because the atmosphere is different and there is dust on Mars. So he's already beginning to think. So he's got a team that's working on sensors to take a look at the particulate matter and the dust and being able to measure things about it so that we can overcome some of the problems we saw when we went to the moon. And I was just fascinated by it. And then I said to him, well, I'm not sure you're aware of this, but we have planetary protection laws. So what if the astronauts coming back from Mars got sick? We would potentially be able to use the data collected by your sensors to see if their sickness wouldn't be a problem for planetary protection here in Earth from people coming from Mars back to Earth and potentially taking ill. So he was looking at a problem from the landing in its effect. And from my exposure at NASA, I was able even to have him consider and go a little bit further that what happens when they come back to Earth and we still have to abide by planetary protection.
You and I grew up at a time where they just landed on the moon. Well, you just said people coming back from Mars. Wow. Mind-blowing here. Let's talk a little bit about some of the resources that might be available. What do you see and what are some of your favorite resources for, let's say, someone who's never coded before and maybe is a little bit intimidated by it?
Yeah. So one of the things to do is we actually made a conscious effort to make sure that we recruited in ways that was accepted or messaged appropriately for women. You know, when you want to bring diversity in, you can't be one way in your marketing approach, and not to sound like we were marketing people, right? Well, this is just a great idea. Everybody should come to do that. So we made a conscientious attempt to reach out to organizations that cater to female coders and along those lines. And so what we did is we were able to, yesterday, I think the statistics were 42% of the coders participating in the data boot camp were females, and then 58% were males. This is the highest percentage that we had seen as participants as females. So what we did is we did the outreach to this differently. And what folks saw yesterday, and I only saw a glimpse of it, is just the different approach to problem solving. And I believe what I think I heard this story is there were a couple of girls that came along just to try. And that's what we really want to see is just people to try. You know, you start anything and you're not good at it. You could have an affinity for it and you pick up on it faster, but everybody starts at start. And so what we did is we were able to convert a few folks to really thinking they could code at a time when it didn't feel like maybe they thought they could do it. So opening up people's breaking down their own self paradigms on what they think possible within their self is something that we saw yesterday. And the way we could make that happen was by marketing and doing a little bit outreach a little bit differently to cater to different genders as well as races and ethnicity.
You've touched on an interesting point that's come up again and again. So many times we start something new, we love it, but we're not good at it when we first start. Mm-hmm. All too many of us will say, well, that means I have no talent for this.
Yeah, right. So there's talent and there's learning. And sure, there are folks that are physically, you know, a better runner, a faster runner, or might have better ball handling skills and that. And I am reminded of something that I watched is that you should never stop trying. So this woman got on stage, and this was a long time ago, and this really opened up my mind to how powerful the mind really is. And so it was a woman presenter, and she asked, so how many people feel like they can't catch a ball? So going back to what my age is I was told that I couldn't be an athlete, and yet I played basketball in my neighborhood, and I was picked to be on teams, and I scored for the teams, and I defended successfully, not always successfully, right? And so I felt like I could, but then when I got to school, basketball wasn't an option. The National Education Act of 1972, the amendments, Title IX, hadn't been signed yet. So I felt like I wasn't then ever going to be able to play ball. So fast forward about 10, 15 years later, this woman was on stage and she said, how many women feel that they can't catch a ball? And so she brought them all on stage. Now, how nervous would that be? And she said to them, yes, okay, these women believe that they can't catch a ball. And she said, great, here's what I want you to do. I want you, see the lines on the ball? She was using a simulated baseball. And she said, see the lines on the ball? I want you to look at those lines on the ball. And then she threw the ball to the women. Every single one of them caught it. Because what they did is they focused on something they were seeing, and they were able to then overcome their mental paradigm by focusing on the line and then just reaching out onto that line. So when we talk about what we can and can't do, sometimes we have to check our heads first and then know that, sure, maybe we won't be a professional in it, but if it gives us joy, then we shouldn't stop overcoming the boundaries to getting better.
What would you really love to see Space Apps doing by the time we get to 2030?
Wow, I haven't thought that far ahead. Where would I put this in 2030? I think what I would have to do is that we will be on the precipice of going to Mars with humans right in that time frame. And what I would like folks to be doing is giving NASA ideas on the experiments that we need to be sending to Mars. We also would be looking for more ideas about potentially sustaining human life on Mars. And how do we leave Mars in a better place than the way we are treating our Mother Earth right now? And so I would say those would be three areas that I would like to see happen if we haven't done it by then already.
You've already talked about not succumbing to ideas you've been told and not just accepting, no, I can't do it. But what else would you like people to really get from you and your work about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
I would remind folks that be curious. I don't have a propensity to be an engineer. So why do I say that? So my husband builds and takes apart things all the time. That doesn't interest me in what I like to do to spend my time. What I like to do, though, is solve problems. And so we solve problems in different ways. And so be curious. When you see a problem, if you can't solve it immediately, let it mull over and invite a few friends to maybe help you do this. And it's through that curiosity and that perseverance that you then begin to work through those particular problems you have. And that can be people problems as well. I always tell people, I'm in the job of people. I know that technology will help us, but I have to help people overcome their own personal barriers barriers. I have to help teams overcome the barriers they're throwing at each other in order to be creative, in order to bring innovation into the world of NASA, into the world, and help make science fiction fact. So I'm all about focusing and bringing the right groups together, or helping people see that they can be better than they believe themselves to be.
You and I have been listening to NASA Chief Information Officer Renee Wynn. If you'd like to know more about NASA's annual International Space Apps Challenge, you'll find information on spaceappschallenge.org. But meanwhile, you don't have to wait until 2017 to become more involved in NASA's citizen science programs. You'll find information on their new DataNauts program at open.nasa.gov/explore/DataNauts. That's open.nasa.gov/explore/DataNauts. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.